Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome Billy Bragg to the program, and welcome back to Canada, Billy.
Well, thanks very much, man. Very, very happy to be here.
First question is, I get the impression that you have a bit of a soft spot for Canada. It's something that's kind of inherently Canadian. When somebody from elsewhere mentions Canada, we get kind of excited in a quiet, polite way. So when somebody writes a song like, say, Ontario, Quebec and Me, we automatically kind of love that guy, and he seems to like us. So what is it that appeals to you about Canada and keeps you coming back?
Usually the fact that I'm coming in from America. So Canada after America is quite, it's like home. It's almost like coming home. You guys know how to make tea. You know, your newspapers have some news from elsewhere in the world. Your understanding of the politics of socialism are, much more European. In fact, Canada's a little bit like a European country, It's coming up across the parallel there is always refreshing.
I'm sure we recently had an election that's given us back our conservatives after a long absence. And during the election, one of our top Labour leaders was derided and removed from the NDP because he was advocating what we call strategic voting. You were promoting the same approach in your area of Dorset to keep the Conservatives out by siding with either the Labour or Liberal Democrat candidate. Do you feel that your campaign was successful, and is strategic voting a more acceptable strategy in the UK than it seems to be here?
In the UK, yeah. We call it tactical voting, where you vote for the candidate most likely to defeat the Conservative incumbent. I mean, it's do-it-yourself proportional representation, really. If we had a more proportional system in the UK, you wouldn't need to do that. And that's what a lot of us would like, because then the Conservatives would be in a minority continually. They wouldn't be able to win such huge power as they did in 1979 with Margaret Thatcher. And I think particularly when you have what amounts to a two-party system, more or less, it can deliver huge landslides to governments that don't have a big mandate. And although I don't know exactly how the numbers fell in Canada, I think strategic voting, tactical voting is a way of, encouraging people to get out and vote. A lot of people in my country don't be bothered to vote anymore because they don't think their vote makes a difference. Well, strategic voting makes your vote make a difference. You vote and the Tory doesn't get in, or the Labour or the Lib Dem does. It gives you something to vote for in constituencies where the competition is very one-sided often.
So you'd be an advocate for a proportional representation system? A lot of people are advocating for that here and getting rid of the Senate and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Senate should be democratic. I would like to see a democratic Senate. Whether you have your proportional chamber in the Senate or in the main chamber, what do you call your low house?
The upper house is actually the Senate, but the lower house is just the House of Commons.
The House of Commons, same as us, yeah. I mean, I've been an advocate for quite some time now for proportional representation in our upper house, the House of Lords, whilst keeping first past the post, as we call it, in the Commons, because I think there's that personal connection with constituents. So there's no reason in a two-chamber system that you shouldn't have a first past the post in one house and have proportional representation in the other house, so that and the both houses be elected by the same election, so that when you go in your general election, you cast your vote in favour of a particular party, and if your party doesn't win in your riding, your vote then counts in the second chamber and you get proportionally represented. Although you're going to get direct representation, so I know this is rather complex for you people there listening at home, but it's all about. I'm worried about people turnout falling in election. What was the turnout like this year?
It was actually a bit higher than it was the last time. I think the last time was about 60%. It did go a bit higher because it was such an important election. But it was a Conservative minority, and they could fall at any time.
Yeah, I mean, in our country, it's dropped since the night. Well, in the elections in the 20th century have all been below 65%, whereas our general elections in the post-war period were more usually in mid-70s. So it went down to 59% at one point, which was really, really concerned that we're dropping towards American levels of participation. So in that sense, proportional representation and all constitutional issues, I think, that encourage people to come out and vote and to believe that their vote makes a difference are worthwhile pursuing.
So it sounds like the situation in the UK is kind of similar to here, and people here would be all for proportional representation, at least in the upper house or the Senate, as we call it.
I don't understand why you never, ever hear PR discussed in America, proportional representation. You never, ever. You speak to activists of all shades. No one ever talks about proportional representation, and that's always really amazed me. I don't know why that is.
When your North American tour is over, you're continuing on through the UK on the Hope Not Hate tour to fight fascism. Now, here in Canada, there's definitely fascists, but it's a bit more of a clandestine movement. Yet it seems the problem in Britain is a bit more outward and in your face. Has it gone to the point where there's like Mosley-style black shirts marching around again with regularity? Or has it been a more subtle consciousness creep with just British National Party types spouting off?
Yeah, I mean, it's changed a lot since Mosley. It's even changed since the National Front and their sort of skinhead boot boys in the 70s. The British National Party are much smarter now. They're much cleverer. They're suited. They're booted. But they've learned from the new Labour handbook. It's all about presentation. Where that collapses miserably, of course, is the fact that they're led by a Holocaust denier. So you've got the situation where you've got a British political party that are led by someone who's prepared to make excuses for Adolf Hitler and what he did. And clearly that's not very patriotic. That's a bit of there's a slight anomaly there. They are also going around stirring up a lot of hatred on the doorstep, a lot of fear, particularly among older people. I mean, you know, my mum, for instance, that what she's seen in our hometown change during her lifetime has been pretty phenomenal, you know. And because the forces that have created that change, the forces of globalization, aren't visible, these newcomers, these incomers are visible, and they become the scapegoat for it. And it's very easy for the British National Party to connect the invisible pressures of globalization to the very visible presence of these people in our borough, and that's what they've been doing. And to the extent where they actually won a seat on the local council in my hometown, which was to me was an awful, awful shock. One of the problems we have with the British National Party is that in many places, my hometown included, where Labour have been in control forever, if you want to really annoy your local Labour politicians and get something done, then you vote these evil people in. I don't think the people of Barking are racist. I think the BNP are racist, but I think the people of Barking are just really, really pissed off with the Labour government that's been in power for 8-9 years and hasn't delivered the standard of living that traditionally the Labour Party was committed to because of the Blairite policies of New Labour. So we're reaping a bit of a whirlwind that we unfortunately have ourselves created there.
I understand you're no longer a member of Labour. Is that...
No, I mean, I haven't been a member of Labour since the first Gulf War, but it doesn't mean I'm not prepared to work with them. I mean, the way I was involved with Labour during Red Wedge was I supported them when I could and I opposed them when I had to, and that hasn't really changed. So I'm working with them on reforming the second chamber, but I'm opposing them on the Gulf War and letting them know, you know, as often as I can, that's my position.
In our area of southern Ontario, there's factories closing with regularity, and it's manufacturing and unionized sectors that are being hit the hardest, and many companies here in Canada are packing everything up and heading down south or closing outright. Have you found that the trend has been the same in the UK and Europe, or is there a bit more hope for European labour at the ground floor?
It's difficult. I mean, again, to go back to my hometown, Barking and Dagenham, when I was growing up and left school, the main employer was the Ford Motor Company, had a massive, well, the biggest plant in Europe at Dagenham. They were employing 25,000 people, and then probably that same number again in ancillary firms supplying the motor plant, which is where my dad worked. Now they're not even making cars, they're making engines. 3,000 people working there, it's mostly automated. We've got a very highly skilled workforce, but they've got nowhere to work, you know. And because of the situation with the car plant, my hometown actually doesn't really belong in London demographically, even in the southeast of England. It's my hometown is like an old steel town from up north. It's like, it's a bit like Sudbury, frankly, you know, or Guelph probably. You know, things have moved on, and the great challenge for us now is to regenerate that area and try and you know, utilise the skills that are there, the engineering skills, the practical skills that are there, so people don't have to move away from their families and lose that context. And I think that the challenges that we face can't be beaten nationally. You know, we have to start thinking of looking, you know, capital is organised at an international level. I think Labour should be organised at an international level as well.
On the music front, there's been quite a bit of excitement about your 2006 reissue series, which came out this week. You must have had a phenomenal amount of work and material to sort through. Was it a long process, or was it relatively straightforward for you?
It was relatively straightforward. I mean, you have to remember that if you listen to those very early albums when I'm playing solo, I still play like that now. So I'm quite close to that material. You know, in fact, I've got to do an in-store tomorrow, and I'm thinking I might just play the first album like that. It'll take me about 15 minutes. Bang. I mean, you know, so I'm quite close to that stuff. The thing I felt enjoyed most about it was how edgy it still sounded. How it, you know, and if it came out today, it would sound as much out of place as it did when it came out in 1983 at the height of the New Romantics, you know. Some people would be appalled by its rawness. You know, people like James Blunt would be quaking in their boots. But you know, there'll be equally be a number of people who'd be feel that there's something really interesting and raw and real about it and be drawn to it. So, you know, in that sense, it's pretty timeless. I was amazed how contemporary it sounded.
Finally, Billy, we ask all of our guests for a musical request. I'd like to ask you, is there anything you're listening to these days that you'd like to hear if you happen to be listening to independent radio?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always up for hearing some something that says something more than just I'm great, you're not, and do you like my socks, which is all that most bands seem to be interested in saying these days. I think there's some great music coming out from England at the moment. There's a lot of really good guitar bands over there. You know, the Kaiser Chiefs, the Editors, and I don't know, have you ever heard of a band called Hardfi?
No.
They're pretty cool. I mean, they're you know, in the spirit of the Clash, and they're playing stuff that asks very, very difficult questions. You know, they played at the left field at Glastonbury. We have a field at Glastonbury. It's not a field, it's actually a very big marquee, which is sponsored by the unions. And my relationship with the unions is still very powerful. I mean, my tour that you touched on there, the Hope Not Hate Tour, is sponsored by the main trade unions. So there, it's good to see bands coming into that tradition as well. But it all goes back to the Clash, really, doesn't it? I mean, it doesn't matter whichever way you look at it. So I think I'm always up for a bit of the Clash. So why don't we have something from the Clash?